The above estimates may be conservative. At Washington's Economic Strategy Institute, Clyde Prestowitz, citing the Goldman Sachs analysis and a kindred set of evaluations by the International Monetary Fund, suggested that if analysts eschew converting Chinese yuan and U.S. dollars based on exchange rates and instead calculate in terms of China's domestic purchasing power, its GDP could be effectively as large as America's by 2025. This could bring a serious U.S.-China contest by the 2010s. To be sure, many things can go wrong with such forecasts. Wars, energy shortages, stock market crashes, and economic depressions. On the other hand, if some British expert had contended in 1850 that by 1895 the United States would lead the world in manufacturing, he would have been correct. And despite the dislocations of the Civil War, several stock market panics, and the Depression of 1873. The supporting argument to make for China's ascent rests on several basic strengths, from its savings rate and technological history down to its current rapid rise in scientific capacity. Impressive is too weak an adjective. As of 2005, China had a savings rate in the 43% range, while the savings rate in the United States had turned negative. Savings were being drawn down. On top of which, in 2003, China passed the United States as the top global recipient of foreign direct investment. Then there is China's long-standing talent for technology. As one U.S. business publication set forth, history shows that inventiveness is firmly planted in China's DNA. Gunpowder, rocketry, wheelbarrows, cast iron, compasses, paddle wheel boats, block printing, stirrups, papermaking, and mechanical clocks. All came from China, often centuries before they appeared in the West. Within a generation or so, China may well resume its pioneering. A 2005 study by Harvard economist Richard Freeman, director of the Labor Studies Program at the National Bureau of Economic Research, documents how U.S. technology is threatened by a dramatic realignment of scientific specialists and research facilities away from the United States to Europe and especially Asia. In 2001, he says, the European Union gave 40% more doctorates in science and engineering than the United States did, and China's gains are even steeper. China is expected to surpass the United States in numbers of engineering doctorates by 2010. At the college level, statistics show a waning interest among U.S. students in science-related careers. In 2001, only 17% of all bachelor degrees in the United States were in natural science and engineering, compared to a world average of 27% and a Chinese average of 52%. Equally to the point, Freeman worries that a combination of advanced science and low-cost labor, which he calls human resource leapfrogging, will weaken the U.S. global trade position, forcing difficult adjustments in the U.S. economy and labor force. In the meantime, the difficulties facing the United States in oil supply, burgeoning debt, loss of dollar hegemony, and the ultimately unbearable burden of Medicare and Social Security suggest their own harsh timetable. In part one of this book, I suggested that a number of countdowns by oil geologists, the big oil firms themselves, currency watchers, ecologists, and counters of public and private debt, as well as the end times religious element, had already become powerful, if rarely acknowledged, pressures in the making of U.S. domestic and foreign policy. These various trends and countdowns include too many different circumstances to lend themselves to an actual chart, so perhaps an imagined one is best. First, put in one column the earlier estimates as to when China might or might not start to catch up with and even pass the United States in gross domestic product. Next to that sequence, put a middle-range forecast for the several decades, the 2010s probably, when global oil production outside OPEC might peak. In the next imaginary column, visualize two related trend lines, the cost of oil per barrel and the annual expense of the growing amount of oil and gas the U.S. will have to import. The adjacent column should list the prospects over the next 15 years for the U.S. current account deficit. And one column beyond that, the reader can mentally jot down the unfolding prospects for the U.S. dollar during the same stressful and high-powered time frame. Beyond these, of course, it will also matter what happens to Social Security, Medicare, the federal budget deficit, and the various tabulations of U.S. public, private, and total credit market debt. The 2010s could easily be a very troubled decade, and the 2020s after them. Many cautionary time frames are converging just at a time when the political leadership of the United States, much like that of past leading economic world powers in their later days, is not in the most competent hands.